they're getting wild for me. And all the pretty chicks all wanna smile at me. These rap cats, man, they all got this out for me. And if I ever see them, man, they probably bow to me. And when this beat drop, I know they gon' lean. Word they be. Hello and welcome to another episode of Amon Sharon's Pirate Radio Podcast. Today we have another illustrious guest, Chris Chavez, a guy I've been following for a while and been a big fan of. He hosts the podcast network Sidious Mag, and he hosts Runners NYC and the Sidious Mad podcast, and there's several other podcasts on that network. He's a big running journalist for Sports Illustrated, and we're lucky enough to have him on as a guest today. Thank you for coming on.
No, thanks for having me.
All right, so take me through how you got started in running journalism.
Yeah, so it's really funny because growing up, I grew up here in New York City, a Queens kid, but I'm a Yankees fan. And so I wanted to be the New York Yankees like beat writer growing up. I wanted to play for the New York Yankees. I wanted to be Derek Jeter's like replacement. And so, I really wasn't that good of a baseball player. I got cut from my freshman baseball team. And then after that, I had to kind of figure out if I want to remain close to sports, and especially like the Yankees, like how can I do it? And so I said, all right, I'm going to be the Yankees beat writer for like a newspaper or a website or something like that. And so I just decided I'm going to study journalism. I got involved right away with the high school newspaper. And then from there, a passion for writing really started that I didn't expect. Like growing up, I don't remember really enjoying language arts class and all that stuff. But in high school, I got into it. I was covering all sorts of sports, even like writing columns on professional sports, which is funny to think about, like why that even had a place like on a high school newspaper. But it was cool. And then I decided to study journalism at Marquette University. And when I got there, sort of, I started running on my own. In high school, I was just like a high school sprinter, nothing too crazy, very average, where my best PR was probably my 200, where I ran 25.1. But that didn't really get me any sort of like college looks, and I had no interest whatsoever in running in college. So, eventually I got to Marquette, started running, you know, 2-3 miles a day just to kind of stay healthy and find distance running in a way where, I could hop into charity 5K and all that kind of stuff. But I watched the New York City Marathon on TV and I was like, all right, I want to do that someday. And so that's kind of like when I got hooked on distance running and started doing some of my own running. Eventually I'd run like my first marathon maybe a year or so later, but in between, you know, really took to the half marathon distance and worked my way up. So that transition from running 200 meters to 26.2 miles happened very, very quickly for me. But you know, in that time span too, from 2011 to 12, there's an Olympics in London in 2012. And so for me, there came a point where I stayed in on like a Friday night in college. I decided not to go out with my friends, and I just stumbled upon like this live stream for a float track meet, and it was happening out in California, and I watched it, and this guy, Dathan Ritzenhine, ran like a crazy 5K in like 13 something, and me having run like a 5K in like 20 minutes maybe a couple weeks before was like, that's crazy fast. Like, this guy might be like the Olympic gold medalist, and not really knowing too much about the sport. So I got hooked pretty quickly, and I wanted to know more about the sport before the Olympics rolled around. So in a way, I started reading a bunch of old newspaper articles and not newspaper articles, like magazine stories, watching old YouTube videos, even like maybe picked up a book or two, and really just started learning about the sport in that way. And I got to cover the Adidas Grand Prix, which used to happen at Icon Stadium. And that was my first sort of exposure to professional track and field athletes. And so with the flow track guys, I was able to show them sort of that I, you know, don't really get nervous doing these interviews because I don't know the star power that some of these athletes have. Like if it was the Yankees, it's like me trying to interview Derek Jeter, like that wouldn't happen. Like, right. I get so nervous, and even to this day. So that was interesting for me because I was learning and getting involved in the sport kind of all at the same exact time. And yeah, so that was my first introduction, was working through with flow track. And so from there on, they liked what I was doing and started inviting me to go cover track meets on weekends. So, you know, me being in Milwaukee, I would fly out on Thursday night and then go out to say Florida, Minnesota, California, every weekend to go cover a track meet, whether it was helping out on the live stream, doing some interviews, writing previews and that kind of stuff. So it was a lot of fun, and it definitely got me super in the trenches with running journalism sort of in that way.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like you were willing to do it all for them, and they really liked that between previews and interviews. Backtracking a little bit, how did you get that job for FloTrack?
So it was literally just shooting Ryan Fenton like an email and a DM. And it's interesting because, like, I look back at it, and FloTrack was very video heavy at the time. Like, they you know, were Workout Wednesday videos and interviews after that. And I think they maybe had just started dipping their toes into live streaming. But I noticed that they didn't have much of a writing presence. And for me, that's what I was studying at Marquette. I was a journalism major. And so I figured, okay, maybe this is something I could offer them. Just like, I'm going to be at school, not necessarily kind of carving out my own space. It was never formally like an internship or anything like that. I was just kind of like contributing right away. And in a way, I got involved so deep where I kind of like was doing more actual like writing and stuff for them than I was in the classroom. And the way I kind of put it to people was just sort of, I think, you know, studying journalism is more of like you learn about the skills that you need to get by within the industry, but really putting it into practice, whether it's through internships or through a job, like that's really, I think, kind of like where the importance comes. And so I was, you know, sharpening that skill set through what I was doing with FloTrack. And so, you know, I'm forever grateful for the opportunity that they gave me, and I was with them for 2 years. So that was awesome because, you know, I was learning so much and, yeah, they took a risk on a 19-year-old kid, and I got lucky to catch him at a time where they were still growing, and so I hopped on the pirate ship, and it was good.
That's awesome. Yeah, it sounds like you got some great first-hand experience, and obviously that's the best way to learn. Talk about the transition from FloTrack to where you are now.
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, I was supposed to do an internship in the summer of 2013 with like a newspaper out in Salt Lake City, Utah. Like I got accepted to this thing called like the Sports Journalism Institute, which is they take like 13 or like a dozen so sports journalists from across the country, like students, to try and motivate them and get them like sort of like the help and exposure to upping the number of minorities and women in sort of these newsrooms. And so I was one of the 13 chosen for the summer of 2013, but they wanted me to go to Salt Lake City. And I was a finalist for like an internship at ESPN. And but, you know, I was being shipped off to Utah, which I wasn't so thrilled about. A lot of people like got internships closer to home. And at that point, I still didn't even have a license. So I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get by in Utah for a whole summer. But, you know, Ryan Fenton from FloTrack just came in and swooped me off my feet by offering me to go to Europe for the summer and covering the track and field circuit out there. So I, you know, couldn't say no to that. Like the opportunity to go to Europe and bounce around from country to country every couple of days and, you know, be up close with some of these professional athletes and see some amazing places. I had never been to Europe before that. So it was cool. I was kind of like living out of a suitcase for a month and a half but bouncing around to all these Diamond League track meets. But I really took a risk on myself because, you know, I said no to the Sports Journalism Institute and I didn't know how that was going to affect me going forward. And I started to kind of feel some of the effects of it that fall when I had to, you know, got back to school and now I'm a junior and I have to apply to internships again. And when FloTrack was a thing on my resume at this point now for like a year and a half, it was, you know, for runners, people knew who they were, but outside of that, like they were still kind of not there in the media landscape where not too many people knew about them. So I, you know, applied to a bunch of internships and didn't hear back. And I started to wonder, did I make a mistake and not taking that newspaper job? And so eventually things, I got lucky again and the Sports Journalism Institute like reached out to me and they wanted me to apply again because ESPN had like inquired about me because I was a finalist the year before. And then all of a sudden I wasn't in the talent pool. They were kind of curious like what had happened there. And so, you know, they brought me back and they let me go on board. And then I interned at ESPN for the summer of 2014. And that was really cool to kind of be on the campus in Bristol, Connecticut to see, you know, Stephen A. Smith like on the lunch line and some of these people that you see on TV. I became really good friends with John Anderson from SportsCenter, and
he's one of my favorites. Really good friends
I mean, he's a legend. He's been there 20 plus years. And he's a big track and field fan because he was a high jumper at Missouri back in the day. And so we text every now and then, and whenever there's something that happens in track and field, he'll shoot me a message, and I'll also do my best to get track on SportsCenter from time to time by feeding it to him. So that was fun. And so, you know, my boss at ESPN was also like a big runner, and so he kind of was on the same page as me and enjoyed what I was doing, where he wanted to keep me on board covering the marathons beyond my internship once it finished in August. So that fall I was covering Chicago, New York, and then into the spring the next year, London, Boston, even I went out to Los Angeles to cover these marathons for ESPN.com. And so that was fun. And graduation's kind of rolling around, rolling around. And I got a job offer from ESPN and a job offer from FloTrack. But it really, and Sports Illustrated kind of came into the picture sometime in, you know, the spring of 2015. And so it came down to Sports Illustrated and ESPN, and which I'm super grateful and fortunate of, because, you know, not too many people have that coming out of college. And so it was really tough. But ultimately, you know, I knew Sports Illustrated has a history and a great appreciation for the Olympics. And if that was my goal to make it to the next one in 2016, this could be my best chance. And so, plus they were based in New York. It was good to come home as opposed to being out in middle of nowhere, Connecticut.
Yeah.
So I took the Sports Illustrated job and kind of worked my butt off for a year to prove myself to the editors and to the management team there that, like, I know track and I deserve to be at the Olympics in 2016. And ultimately that became a dream come true the following summer. And, you know, I've been at Sports Illustrated now for 5 years, and this summer I was supposed to be in Tokyo, but, you know, I'm ready to wait it out one more year, and hopefully it happens. So it's definitely been a fun ride so far, for sure. And I'm very lucky, and I recognize sort of like those moments where the opportunity presented itself and I took advantage of that moment. And so there is a luck component that goes into it, but I also think, like, I have been working a little bit harder.
Of course. Yeah. You work your ass off for those opportunities, and obviously a dream opportunity is to go to the Olympics. Do you ever step back and pinch yourself at the Olympics and say, wow, how did I get here?
I cried during the opening ceremony, and it was because, you know, I took a moment for myself. Like, I'd been there. I got into the opening ceremony with a former Sports Illustrated writer, and he used to write for Grantland, Andrew Sharp. And for us, it was both our first Olympics, and we're both kind of, I was in my early 20s and he was like in his late 20s. And so we got to go to the opening ceremonies, and some of the other Sports Illustrated writers who were there had been there multiple times. And so I remember watching sort of like all the athletes coming in and all the festivities, the lighting of the cauldron. And at one point I snuck away and decided to just take a lap around the whole stadium. And I popped into like a spot where there were just a bunch of fans. And so, you know, I just took it in for that moment. And I was like, man, like, this is a dream come true. This is what I was working 4 years really hard for, from 2012 to 2016. Like, it was making sort of a name for myself within, you know, the track and field media landscape, and to get to this moment. And so it was awesome. And I got chills, right, you know, as soon as I walked into the stadium. And, you know, I really wonder how it's going to feel again if the Tokyo Olympics happen. And you know, so I it's hard to kind of like picture the moment until you're actually in it, but it was awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad you really got to take a step back and appreciate it, because obviously not everyone gets that opportunity. So I'm glad you got the chance to really take it all in. And in regards to the Tokyo Olympics, I think when they do happen, it'll be a really special moment of unity, overcoming, you know, the virus, God willing, that does happen. So that'll be a really special moment. You've obviously had some huge guests on your podcast. You had Galen Rupp on recently, maybe arguably the best American distance runner ever. Just talk a little bit about that and how cool that was for you.
Yeah, Galen. So that one was interesting, because it wasn't like necessarily like a scheduled podcast. That just ended up being like some of the clips from a virtual press conference and the questions that I asked. And there were only like two or three people in the virtual press conference. So I kind of took advantage of the moment to ask him a couple questions, and none of them were like really hard pressing questions that I would maybe ask in a press conference setting, but it was cool. And I'm glad that we were able to have that discussion just kind of like after one of those races. But yeah, it's been, I feel like the setting and the vibe that the podcast I do gives off is sort of like a much more laid back conversation where you get to know these athletes. We unpack like some of their biggest performances, whether it's, you know, throughout their career or, you know, their most recent one, if they just broke like a record or something like that. But yeah, it's been 3 years, I guess, since I started doing this. I haven't listened back to the very first episode, but I'm sure it was not as good as maybe some of the more recent ones, but it's been fun. Some of like my favorite episodes go on for like maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours sometimes. And so, yeah, and I've drawn inspiration in doing that from, you know, guys like Bill Simmons and the way he does his podcast. And I've been listening to a lot of Dax Shepard and Armchair Expert and the Rich Roll podcast. So, you know, it's just kind of like getting those people to let their guard down for an hour or so and, you know, kick it back and chat. So that's been fun. And so the podcast medium is definitely one that I don't foresee myself stopping anytime soon. It's been so much fun, and yeah, I'm gonna keep it going. I know I just calculated this past week, I've edited and produced more than 130 hours worth of podcasts in 2020 alone. And so I'm all in. It's so much fun for me.
Yeah, there's no looking back. It's really, I love podcasting. Obviously, I have a podcast, but I think it's also a great opportunity for athletes to just know they're not going to have that like gotcha journalism questions and get the chance to just lay back and, like you said, just talk normally for an hour and really let their guard down. And I think
for sure.
Yeah, that's how you get some of the best stuff. So talk about why you wanted to first start a podcast and just building the Sidious Mag podcast network in general.
Yeah, the reason I wanted to start it was because, you know, I hadn't done it in a while. I know I did it for a couple episodes of a show in 2014 with two former guys who worked at FloTrack with me, where we would do like a weekly news show, just unpacking everything that happened in the sport. But that was kind of short-lived because getting three people together and like the scheduling and then the editing, it just came to be like so much for me, and I didn't have that much time for it. So you know, in 2017, when I launched Sidious Mag, it was sort of like, you know, once again, taking a page out of like Bill Simmons's approach to the way he created The Ringer, where it was like pop culture and humor and commentary. And so I was like, well, running really doesn't have that. And so, you know, I want to build a place out where I can do that. Because right after I got back from the Olympics, I had a hard time with writing. You know, I didn't believe writer's block was a real thing until it actually like hit me. And it was hard because I realized I'm so passionate about the sport. And I care about, you know, little things like the Peyton Jordan Invitational and like the Florida Relays and that kind of stuff. But to the regular Sports Illustrated reader, you know, the guy who consumes, you know, MMQB columns and that kind of stuff and really follows the NBA, like, track is not one of those big sports that pops off until it's either like the Olympic year or maybe the year before. So now I have this time in between to really have to figure out what I'm going to do, because before, from 2012 to 13 and 14, I was doing stuff with FloTrack, and those are people who do care about sort of like the you know, those tiny meets every single weekend. And so now that I'd reached, you know, kind of this point at Sports Illustrated, I had to kind of figure out, well, how am I going to do this? Because I'm still so passionate about it. So, you know, I got permission from my boss to start a blog with my friends. And so I don't think they've anticipated it to be as big as it's become. But, yeah, it was just I created it as a place to provide sort of that humor, that commentary, that relatability to runners. So it's not just like news and results. It was something different. And, you know, I never really – podcasted much before that, but I was like, all right, well, if we're gonna follow the Bill Simmons model, then we do need like a flagship podcast. And so I took it upon myself to start hosting it. And, you know, just over the years, I've got contact information for so many professional runners and coaches and that kind of stuff that it was easy to just get people on the phone and be like, all right, let's chat for an hour or so. I'll record it and then I'll edit it and post and then do it. So that's kind of like how it got started. And, you know, now I guess we're approaching 200 or so episodes, and it's been, yeah, it's a lot. And I'm very curious what the total runtime would be. Someone tweeted at me maybe about a year ago saying that they listened to every single episode in like a couple span of a couple months. And I was like, wow, that's pretty crazy. And I was like, that's, I don't know how they haven't gotten tired of my voice. And because I do for sure, like listening back to some episodes, I'm like, man, you sound so whiny sometimes. But yeah, I'm not stopping the podcast anytime soon. And then kind of growing it beyond just my show. It was just, you know, let's get creative and you know, launch some other podcasts and platforms. So, you know, I teamed up with my friend Gene Mack to launch the Runners of NYC podcast, where, you know, as opposed to just interviewing professional runners, this is a show where we interview people with full-time jobs and have, you know, managed to qualify for the Olympic trials, or they, you know, saw something lacking in their community and they wanted to get more people active. And so they started their own run crews. And so New York is fascinating in that sense because it's so diverse. Right. And especially within the running community, there's so many running crews and these very vocal people. So it's getting to know them and sharing their story and amplifying it also to a national sort of audience, because it is on like the city's platform. Like I get messages sometimes from people who say that they're not even from New York, but they listen to the show and they enjoy it. And they have like, it makes them curious about their next visit to New York, about getting involved and then maybe joining one of these group runs for a day or so. So that's been rewarding. And, you know, and over time, you know, we've launched an offshoot of different shows with Dana Giordano, who's like a professional runner for the Boston Athletic Association. She wanted to kind of do a show where she interviews just successful women within the industry. And so whether they were runners or coaches or entrepreneurs, like, I was like, yeah, more power to you. Like, I love that idea. Let's do it. Scott Fobel, the marathoner, said, you know, he just wants to talk about movies with his friends. And so I was like, let's do that. That sounds like a lot of fun too. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm giving myself extra work in that sense, having to later on edit and sometimes record these podcast episodes. But, you know, I'm not, the reason why I do it is because there's moments I'll have, you know, whether it's like at a marathon expo or a race, someone will just, you know, tell me like, hey, like I really enjoyed the podcast. And it's become, and I like that feeling, because if no one was listening to this stuff, then I probably would have given up on it a while ago. But right, the fact that I see that it's going strong and continuing to grow, that's what keeps me going. And that's what makes me want to do even more, even though like it drains me and I don't maybe sleep as much as I should. Those moments are the rewarding part to it.
Yeah, that's really cool to be the Bill Simmons of your own network. How many podcasts do you have on the network in total right now?
Oh man, that's interesting. I think there's like a total of 8 or 9, but like, wow, two of them like aren't really like that active anymore. But you know, there's like 6 or 7 that go strong. And you know, that's the other thing too, is like, for me, I do all of this like in addition to my full-time job with Sports Illustrated, which, you know, takes up my day usually from 9 to 5. So I have to find the pockets of time to edit and produce some of these episodes. I think the area where I'm lacking is sort of like finding that sort of consistency where, all right, this is going to be like a Thursday show. We're going to drop it every single Thursday. For me, it's kind of like, all right, we record on Friday. I want to get this out to people as soon as possible. Maybe I'll drop it on Monday. Or right. So like, I guess maybe coming down to like an official set schedule is the one area where I could get better at. But for the most part, I think a lot of people still do understand, like, this is my passion project. Like it's not my full-time job. And so, in a way they get it and they're appreciative. Like, at least like I'm doing it. So.
Right. You're putting something out, whether it's every week or not is, you know, the quality over quantity type of thing, mm-hmm, which I think is very important. So that's really interesting. I was definitely interested to hear more about your career, and I want to jump over to your personal running career. If that's cool.
Yeah.
So, if I got this right, you're a member of the Brooklyn Track Club.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So I found it really interesting when I was trying to find a track club. It wasn't close enough because I'm out on Long Island, but I found it really interesting how they have like top tier runners and then everyday runners all in the same mix.
It's so interesting because, yeah, that range is pretty crazy. We've got like sub 4 miler, I think we at least one, and then we've got like people who can complete a marathon in 5 or 6 hours. So like that's a crazy big range, and the group has grown to like 400 plus, I would think, at this point. And sometimes that means like a super crowded track, like in normal times, like it would be maybe 150 to 200 people showing up on a Tuesday night, and that can definitely get crowded. And I haven't been back since March just because of, you know, the pandemic, and I don't really feel a need that I need that many people around me to work out. So I've kind of scaled it down to like a much smaller bubble of mine where maybe I've got like 5 training partners or so who I'll meet up with from time to time. But in normal times, yeah, it's a crazy huge group, and multiple people who have qualified for like the Olympic trials and at least like in the marathon. And I think it's been a big benefit in my running because I joined them in late 2017. Ever since then, it's been big jumps in sort of like all my PRs, especially last year. I PR'd in every single distance. The reason that I kind of credit the group toward that is because, you know, I've been able to find these people with the same like-minded goals and talent level where if I need to get dragged on a tempo run, you know, I can pick a couple people faster than me and then just go get after it. But also the accountability that comes on a Saturday morning in the summer to get out and run 18 to 20 miles during marathon training, like it helps when you have other people to do it. And so when it comes to, and people constantly ask me, it's like, what kind of advice would you give like a runner starting off or anyone really? And it's just like, find your people and find your group, because and I understand like some places it's tougher based on like location and accessibility, but even if it's just one other person, it definitely helps, I think, to have someone else to keep you accountable and on a set schedule. And so for me, that's been the Brooklyn Track Club, and in particular some of my training partners like Ryan Welsh and Zach Price. They've been like my go-to guys. And so, I think I've got a lot more PRs left in my legs. Cause I was only a sprinter in high school. And so some of these distance races, like I'm just hitting my stride. So like, I'm going to keep going.
Yeah. Nowhere to go but up. And that was huge for me. Cause there was a period after I ran out all of my eligibility where I had been on, you know, high school and college teams for like 8 years or close to it, where I really needed that group to help motivate me. And I was really happy I found the Elite Feats, a Long Island running club, and they put on a bunch of different races. So I'm happy to be joining them. And like you said, have people similar talent level to help push you is a huge help. In the past on the podcast, and another reason I wanted to have you on is I like to ask people what breaking 5 minutes on the mile for the first time means to them. And I'm really happy to have you on because that's a big goal of yours. So what is that going to mean to you when you finally break that barrier?
Man, I'm trying so hard to do it. Like it's crazy because like, I'm surprised it's taken me this long and like I'm finding it this difficult. And so, in high school, my coach Pat Dormer would give t-shirts to anyone who broke, the sub 5 mile, and on the back, it says like sub 5 club. And now the high school kids have gotten so good to the point where breaking 5 was so easy. But back when I was there, like it was a bit tougher and we weren't as good. And so I've joked around and told them like, you got to hold one of those t-shirts for me. And so kind of the big motivation, the reason I'm doing it is kind of, I want that t-shirt. And I want it to just kind of that's the cherry on top, I guess, for me sort of, and like, in sort of like this evolution I'm going through as a distance runner. It's funny because I don't think any of the guys who ran distance in high school with me are really running anymore. So I would definitely be the fastest currently for sure right now. But, you know, once I break 5, it opens the floodgates to like, no, we're not just stopping at 4:59. I want to go after like 4:50 or something like that, because then that would definitely, I think, cement me as the fastest guy in my high school class. So when it comes to just sort of like people in my life who've been runners, it's definitely a lot of my high school buddies. My best friends from high school were all on the track team. And so if I can hold that title in life, it would be awesome. But yeah, I'm chipping away. I'm down to 5:09, which comes out to like a little bit more than 2 seconds per lap. It's coming. I got to keep at it. We're fortunate that like the weather is still a little bit nice out where I could maybe
cut you off real quick. We can only record for 30 minutes at a time, so we're going to pause it and come right back. That's cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we're back with Chris Chavez talking about working towards that sub-5-minute mile barrier.
Yeah. So, you know, I think I'm down to 5:09, which comes out to a little bit more than 2 seconds per lap. And I feel it. I know the training has been there. My 400, my 800 PR is 2:21 from a time trial, which like, okay, come on. Like if you can do two of those, you're well under, but I haven't been able to put it together sort of in that third and fourth lap, but you know, I'm getting there. Maybe because the weather's still nice, I could give it another try, but I'm going to run a 5K pretty soon and hopefully try and crack 18 for the first time. I've never done that. So if I can do that, that'd be a good sign going forward. Possibly taking a little bit of a break after that because I've been going since like June and sort of like doing weekly, maybe two workouts a week. But so I maybe deserve a little bit of a break. But who knows, I think what comes on afterwards. I don't quite know if I'm ready to commit to like doing an indoor season because running indoors sounds kind of weird right now. But yeah, we'll see. The training's been going well though.
How are the legs feeling? Away.
Legs are feeling good and for now, I guess. Like I peaked out at 50 miles a couple weeks ago, which sounds like not a lot.
No, it definitely does.
It does
sound like a lot. But yeah.
For me that's the most sort of like this year. 50 miles during marathon training last summer was kind of just like regular for me. But I'm not training for marathon. I don't have any plans of running a marathon until maybe next summer or possibly next fall doing Chicago. But yeah, as of right now, I'm holding up pretty well, just kind of like keeping it steady at around 35 to 40 miles a week.
Nice. Yeah, I'm really excited. I'd love to have you back on after you break the 5-minute barrier to ask you the same question.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And your coach is, I want to get this, I know it's Finley, but what is his first name and how has he helped you along the way?
So my coach is Steve Finley and Kate Gustafson. So Steve is the head coach of the Brooklyn Track Club. And so last year, sort of, we worked very closely doing everything from the mile to the marathon and notched PRs in every single distance. And he's been great because he was like a professional miler and steeplechaser in the early 2010s, I guess. He almost qualified for the 2012 trials, but then got hurt. But, you know, kind of, I think towards the end of last fall, I noticed, you know, how big the group was getting at Brooklyn Track Club and how much responsibility that takes on someone like him. And so, kind of in a way, I started working with Kate, you know, midway through my training for the Berlin Marathon, and she kind of had a very interesting approach to doing long runs where we mix in a little bit of a tempo run and make a workout out of it. And so Kate is also coaching Henna Rastami, who was one of your former teammates and that's one right. of my teammates right now. And so that's been, I know Henna, I think, was kind of adjusting to that sort of training recently. But yeah, it's, and with Kate, we're totally focused on like some of the shorter distances, and she's like a very accomplished marathoner, has run 2:39 or 2:40 for the marathon and finished like sixth at the Canadian marathon trials. So, yeah, I'm super grateful to have these people in my corner. And so, Finley's been great. Kate's been great. And yeah, it's funny because like, I don't think really someone needs that many coaches when they're running like hobby jogger amateur times, but you know, I appreciate any sort of like feedback I can get. And sometimes when I have these conversations with pros, like I walk away with it, like maybe learning something new and trying to implement it into my own training. So that's another kind of like funny thing that I get out of like having all these conversations with people.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's one thing to have hobby jogger amateur times, and then all of a sudden you break five and you're in a whole new world. So
I take pride in being a hobby jogger. Yeah. Like I know the people, I think on letsrun.com throw it around as kind of an insult, but even like I have a t-shirt that just says hobby jogger on it, and we sell it on like Sidious Mag. And so it's like, there's nothing wrong with it.
No, yeah, you're right. That's a good perspective. I'm glad you brought up Let's Run. A question you like to ask your guests is, have you ever gotten any like trash talk thrown their way on Let's Run? Has that ever happened to you or any?
Oh yeah. There's constantly like people will hit at me on Let's Run, and just the other day I was listening to the Let's Run podcast, and like one of the founders was giving me like some criticism for not asking Galen like tough questions on the podcast, but then like the other co-founder jumped in and was like, no, it's like it's his questions from the press conference, like isn't that what you get, and so don't you get it? And so like I had him defending me, but then yeah, sometimes the message boards can get a little bit mean from time to time. It's funny because like you can read reviews on Apple Podcasts and see like, oh, I mean, like a lot of people seem to love the show, but when someone says you have a whiny voice, like that's the one that sticks with you and like hits at you a little bit extra hard. So yeah, it comes with the territory, but you know, I'm still at it.
Yeah, well, if you have haters, you know you're doing something right.
Exactly.
So they don't boo nobody, so good for you. So I have a couple last questions to wrap up. Question I ask all my guests is, if you could have dinner with any dead celebrity or athlete, who would it be and why?
Oh, dead celebrity or athlete. Oh man. I think about, because when people say like, if you could go to any concert, dead or alive, it's usually I steer towards dead, and I would love to have seen like a Michael Jackson concert, but he wouldn't be someone I want to sit down and have dinner with. Man, this is a tough one. Because if it was alive, it's definitely Derek Jeter.
Okay.
But if it, a dead person, well, I guess Yogi Berra passed away a couple years ago, and he was my other like favorite Yankee, and he's the guy who, you know, saw the Yankees win, you know, the a couple titles when I was alive, but then also played with Babe Ruth. So I'm sure he's got some awesome, interesting stories, and he was really funny. So Yogi Berra and Derek Jeter are my two favorite New York Yankees. And so I'd go with Yogi Berra for sure.
That's a great answer. All the Yogi-isms.
Yeah.
I can't even think of one right now, but there's so many good ones.
Yeah, it's like when you come to a fork in the road, take it.
Yeah, I was thinking of that one. Actually, that's funny. And then, like, it ain't over till it's over, I think some people attribute it to him. I actually read a book, because I'm a big Yankee fan, too, of, like, all the Yogi-isms, and it was just very funny.
Yeah, I have that in my parents' place. I don't have it in on my bookshelf here, but, yeah, he's got a couple of books. I know growing up, I bought all of them.
Awesome, yeah. So I'll end... two more questions. One you asked all your guests as well. The 25 half-court shots for $25 million or 25 years in jail, what would you go with?
Yeah, I always tell people, no, I would not take the shots. For me, $25 million is not the price of my freedom. There are some really bold people who would take the shots. I just don't know. I don't think I'm as confident in sort of like my basketball ability. I played growing up and I was a really small guy. Like I was a point guard, but no, I've not played or even attempted this. I should go to the gym one of these days and try and do it.
Yeah. Right.
But I'm going to pass on the shots.
Yeah, I agree with that. I played AAU through eighth grade and I still wouldn't touch that. It's too long to be in jail.
Way too long to be in jail. And I'm sure like the nerves settle in if you get to like, you know, 15 or so missed shots, and then then it's a whole new ball game from there.
Yeah, even if you were taking like a layup for like $10 million or the rest of your life in jail,
well, there's
like,
no guarantee. Yeah,
yeah, you'd be so nervous, you just brick it.
Yeah,
yeah. I actually just thought of one more question. You're a basketball fan, right?
I'm a Knicks fan. Unfortunately, yeah, I don't watch him as often, but I am a Marquette basketball fan. At least I followed them a lot closer when I was in school, and I got to cover the team while I was there. But, yeah, in a way, I definitely enjoy basketball.
Yeah, me too. I'm a big Knicks fan in the same boat. But do you follow NBA Twitter?
I do follow NBA Twitter,
so, you know, like Woj, everyone. Have you ever felt the responsibility to break news like that?
So it's funny because I guess when I was looking and starting to get into track and reporting on it, I realized that there wasn't really like a Woj or an Adam Schefter when it comes to track reporting. And so in a way if someone said it, then yeah, I would kind of take it upon myself to be like, yeah, I'm sort of like a lot. I have heard from people that they get their track news from me on Twitter, at least, because that's where I'm super active, sort of tweeting out news constantly, whether it's, you know, just straight off from like a press release or I'm breaking some stories myself. Yeah, Twitter's the place where I do it. And not to the extent where I've got hundreds of thousands of followers like Woj, but I've got a good solid 20K followers on Twitter that rely on me. Yeah, and the blue check. Yeah, the blue check is always important.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, the last question I got for you is, what would you like your outro song to be?
Ooh, so, man,
anything I'm trying you to think. Want.
Someone recently asked me what's like my pump up like song, so I'll go with that one. Radio Nowhere by Bruce has been good, but actually, you know, I'll pick something newer than that. Radio Nowhere is like my pump up jam right before a race, but let's see, it's just off his new album. I've been listening to it on repeat constantly. I've got it right here. Give me one sec. Gotcha. I'll go with Burnin' Train by Bruce Springsteen off his newest album.
So you're a big fan of The Boss, I guess.
I love Bruce. I made plans for tonight to watch the latest HBO special that he's got for his new album. But it was funny when this album came out. I texted my friend Paul Snyder and I said to him, I wonder if I'm trying to convince myself that I love Bruce and everything that he does, and that kind of makes, because I'm such a tri-state area guy, mm-hmm. that anything he does, I immediately think is amazing. And I'm kind of like fooling myself a little bit, so I have to take like the Bruce goggles off. But you know, this album I think was really good, and so I've enjoyed that song from it. And so I have plans for 2022 to be vaccinated with a couple of my friends and being at MetLife Stadium and enjoying Bruce touring off his new album.
Yeah, shout out to Pfizer with that vaccine. I definitely went through a Bruce phase in middle school with one of my buddies, so I can definitely appreciate that. But thank you very much for coming on. I actually met you once at the Long Island Mile, and you were really, really cool. So.
Oh, dude, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I got to get, you know, those races out on Long Island are amazing. And Kyle does a great job with that one. And then I think we've done two straight years of going out to do that. What's the 10 miler that goes to the brewery? What's that one?
Bay Harbor Brewery or like Blueport?
Oh, Blue Point. Blue Point. Yeah, the Blue Point 10 miler. It's in January. It can get cold, but made it a tradition to go and do that the last 2 years. And so I want to make it three straight, hopefully, if they hold the race again next year. But yeah, the races out on Long Island are awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully I'll see you at one of these races, and thank you very much again for coming on.
Of course. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks for listening.